The Gestalt Gardener podcast is brought to you by Varicosity Vein Center, providing health assessment screenings and compassionate care to improve your vascular functionality and quality of life. Our doctors and vein specialists offer solutions to painful varicose veins, spider veins, and other venous diseases to our patients. Now offering complimentary vein screenings in Jackson, Madison, and Ridgeland. Information and appointment scheduling at varicosityveincenter.com.
Good morning. Amy, great morning outside. It's hot but beautiful, but that's what it is here in August. Welcome to our party. This is Mississippi Public Broadcasting weekly garden program. We call it the Gestalt Gardener, and I'm your host, horticulturist Felder Rushing. Our program's producer is the awesome Java Chapman, and for the next hour or so, we're going to have some fun. Got some cheesy music coming up, including some things submitted by y'all. I got some emails and a few timely tips for this time of year, but it's a live call-in program, so get ready to give us a call if you got questions or comments or just things you want to talk about. Ready to Garden. We'll be right here on Mississippi Public Broadcasting. Again, the Gestalt Gardener. We'll be right back after a little bit of news and learn how to get dirty.
This is an MPB Think Radio podcast. To hear previous shows, visit mpbonline.org or download the MPB Public Radio app to listen on your iPhone or Android phone on demand.
I hope we can muddle through this right now. John, how does it sound to you over there? Okay.
Yeah, you're sounding way better now.
Okay. Well, you know, it's been really weird weather. A lot of rain and everything. I'm still over in England for the next couple of 3 weeks or so. And anyway, let's just try to muddle through and have a good time. You know, it's just gardening and gardening. You know, the weather and gardening ain't always great. Sometimes the weather on the radio ain't perfect either, but anyway, if you want to give us a call, folks, it is toll-free. It's live here on MPB. We do this every Friday and rebroadcast on Saturday, and just like we do Monday through Friday with all sorts of locally produced programs by local experts talking to local folks. If you want to give me a call, it's toll-free, 1-877-MPB-RING, 1-877-MPB-RING. Don't know what those numbers are, but can't remember numbers anyway. But anyway, let me throw out a couple of things that are going on right now. Are coming up. I try to promote local garden events as best I can, and that can be pretty much anywhere in our area. I've got several coming up starting next week, coming up on August the 7th. This is going to be a lecture at the Museum of Natural Science there in Jackson. It's about Audrey Harrison, and she's going to be talking about different kinds of native milkweeds and other milkweeds and monarch butterflies in Mississippi. Good opportunity to learn about all sorts of stuff. You got kids like to take there, I'm sure they'd be welcome too. Then coming up a couple of weeks after that, August the 25th, there's two different summer native plant events going on. One's going to be down in South Mississippi at Crosby Arboretum, that's on August the 25th. And then there's a workshop on how to plant your own prairie wildflower garden in Tishomingo State Park, way up in the what I call the icebox, the northeast corner of Mississippi. Anywhere, you know, if you're over in western Alabama, listen to this, you're welcome to. How to plant your own prairie wildflower garden. It's going to be at Tishomingo State Park. If you'd like more information about this, the Museum of Natural Science has got it. If you'll go to, just Google Mississippi Museum of Natural Science, it'll take you to the information page. Let me see. Also coming up this fall, there's going to be a couple of things that are going on about wildflowers. There's going to be a really big conference in October. And I know that sounds like a long ways off, but it's only a couple of months or so. But there's a really big thing called Cultivate Wild. It's a two-day native plant conference. They have all sorts of really high-end speakers from all over, local, regional, and national. They're going to have conferences. Anyway, it's produced by the Memphis Horticulture Society. It's going to be at It's probably going to be there at the Botanic Garden in Memphis. Anyway, if you'd like some information on that, shoot me an email. A couple of other things real quick. James Dale Prince, a friend of mine who's a horticulturist with the MSU Cultural Research Extension Center, is an internationally famous celebrity floral designer. I mean, he's really, really well known. He's got some real interesting floral design classes and workshops starting in late August and new ones every month. If you'd like information about that, just see if you can remember coastal.msstate.edu, coastal.msstate.edu. If you'd like some more information on that, I'll be real glad to share that with you. Shoot me an email anytime, garden@mpbonline.org. That's a call-in program, folks. I've got some fun and some really timely emails to share with you, a little bit of cheesy music to share, but since I want to just talk about folks in real time about what's going on in real gardens, let's go down to the Gulf Coast and talk with Brian. Good morning, Brian. How are you, sir?
Hey, good morning. Thanks for having me on.
You bet. What's up?
I was curious. I moved here from California about 7 years ago, and we've transplanted our whole family down here. There's one or two things that we kind of miss from California, and one of them is like the redwoods and sequoias that are over there. And you know, they sell the seed pods and the little kits for planting them, for tourists. And we've got a couple of them, and we're just wondering what the feasibility would be if we planted them in our yard. We've got a pretty good sized yard. If we planted them in our yard, what the feasibility would be for them to actually grow?
Well, first of all, you know, you have an experience with your kids, and whether or not it works out in the long run, the important thing is to do something with your kids. But between you and me, sequoias really don't like our hot, humid climate. You know, up in Northern California, you get north of the Bay Area where they grow. It's like a rainforest, and most important, it cools down at night, and that's a real kicker for a lot of California plants. They can take our summer heat. I mean, they'll grow out down the Central Valley, but they won't take our hot, humid nights. So that's the problem. If you want something like that, though, see if you can find what's called a metasequoia. It's an ancient plant. It's like a cypress tree on steroids, and it grows great, and you really can't tell it from a sequoia.
Okay, that's pretty cool. And my other question was, out in California, they plant a lot of things out in the sand dunes called ice plant, and it kind of helps with erosion, and it helps with sand blowing all over the highway and everything. We have a problem with that on the Mississippi Gulf Coast, the sand blowing on the highway. And would you recommend introducing something like an ice plant to help cut down on that?
Well, it's another good question, and different kinds of dune stabilization plants have been tried, including a lot of our native dune grasses. One of the problems in California, you've got those steep slopes and all, and it's really more of an erosion problem, much of the blowing thing. And most of the ice plants will unfortunately not do as well. There is one called red apples. It's a small leafer. It's got pretty little red flowers. It is a great plant for the Gulf Coast. And I forget the Latin name, but it's just look up ice plant red apples. But as far as using them to stabilize stuff on the coast, you know, we have a whole different kind of wind, you know, and it's flat on the coast, unlike most of California. And I'm afraid those ice plants just get buried like everything else. So I think it's better to stick with the native dune plants that we've got in our area. Really do. Even though I love ice plants, it's probably not the best choice for our coast.
Gotcha. Okay, thank you.
Okay, hey, now keep in mind, Brian, I lived in California for a long time. I lecture on the West Coast all the time.
See
California. So I lived in San Diego a couple of times. Any way I can help you interpret stuff, shoot me an email or give us a call. No problem. Be glad to help.
Okay. Thank you very much. Appreciate that.
All right. Appreciate it. Okay, 1-877-MPB-RING. If you like numbers, it's 877-672-7464. Give us a call. Let's go down really not very far from Biloxi, the other side of the Mississippi coast to Pass Christian. Good morning, Mike. What's going on this morning?
Hey, Felder. How you doing? Appreciate your time.
I'm doing fine.
Got a question. I did a soil sample on my garden, and my pH is way too high. It's about 8.
Yeah.
What can I do to help that?
Well, first of all, 8 is not really that too high. Most plants do well 6.5 to 7.5, even up to 8. So it's really not that high unless you're trying to grow azaleas or blueberries. So right off the bat, I wouldn't worry about it with most plants. If you look around, there's a lot of plants growing perfectly well. Nobody messes with it at all. But as far as what you do practically, you can try to lower the pH, acidify it by adding this stuff called sulfur to the soil. You can get liquid soil acidifiers, or sulfur, but they don't really help that much, and they don't help in the long run. So, for the most part, I would just add organic matter to soil and use a good bark mulch. As it decomposes, it'll add some natural acids to your soil, and then I really wouldn't worry too much about 8.0. Really wouldn't.
Okay, got one more question. Lavender. We've been trying to grow a little lavender and haven't had any luck. What does the pH grow lavender?
It's not so much the pH of the lavender. What lavender doesn't like is our hot summer nights. I mean, it doesn't like heat and humidity. Lavender grows great in France and England, grows up in the mountains, it grows in California. But where it gets hot and humid all night long, lavender just melts. So there's a couple of things to try. First of all, there is a new type of lavender that was just introduced a few years ago. And I'm sorry, if you'll stay tuned, somebody will help me. I can't remember the name of it, but it's a specific new variety. Yeah, well, and also any of the Spanish lavenders, they have sort of a funny little thumb-shaped flower with a little Mickey Mouse ears on top. Spanish lavender does really, really well on the coast, but that's about it. It's not a pH thing. It's more of a drainage and humidity thing.
Yeah, okay. Well, we planted ours up on a bed, you know, where it would drain off, but it just didn't like it.
No, it doesn't, but the thing with lavender, their roots will rot if you just throw a cup of humidity at them. So if you'll work up your dirt and add some grit to it, you know, not gravel, but this gritty stuff, anything to make it work, almost like growing it in sand with a little soil added to it, that'll help a lot. They'll take drought, but they will not stay wet when it's hot and humid.
Okay. Time for the fall garden, I guess, isn't it?
It's time. You know, this week, you know, there on the coast, you still got a couple, 3 weeks when you can plant fall stuff, summer stuff, but you can start planting fall stuff like broccoli and cabbage. The plants haven't really shown up at the garden centers yet, but as soon as they do, you can start planting those. And you can still get in a summer garden if you want to try that.
Yeah, I'm doing a little more on that. I have fresh green beans now.
Yeah. Yeah, see, those things, they grow well in hot weather, and they actually produce better when it starts cooling down in September, October, early November. So you can actually get a really good crop in the fall.
Yep. So, okay, Felder. Thank you so
all
much.
All right, man. Hey, good luck on that lavender.
Thank you.
Folks,
thank
I cannot you. Remember the – you bet. Appreciate it. That was Mike and Pans Christian. I cannot remember the name of this lavender there's energies. I've talked about it several times. I just can't remember of it, but it's – somebody help me out on that. Anyway, let's slide up to Oxford. Good morning, Bruce. How are you doing this morning?
Good morning, Felder. I had talked with you last year about a chrysanthemum that you said was very hardy in Mississippi.
Yeah.
And I can't remember the name of it, but I had emailed you because I wanted to acquire some, and I never got a response.
Huh. You know, that's funny because I get emails about that all the time. I'll go back and double check it, you know, if you email, but shoot me another one just in case. Anyway, the name of it, the most common one is called Clara Curtis. It's not a cushion mom. It's not a florist. It's not a cut flower mom. It's called, I think it's Mora Full. Anyway, I can't remember the species of it, but it's a different kind of chrysanthemum, and there's actually five or six or seven or eight different kinds, but Clara Curtis is the one you're most likely to find locally. I was over in Alabama a few weeks ago, back in the late spring, and I picked up eight different kinds of it besides Clara Curtis at a place called, I'm drawing a blank. Anyway, it's Eden something. Anyway, I'll research it while I'm on the line, but you can mail order some of the different kinds, but Clara Curtis is the one to start with.
Okay, well, let me have your email address again, and I'll send you an email.
Okay, no, appreciate it. Yeah, I'll go through in Java. I had written to Liz there at MPB about this. For some reason, some of the emails that you seem to get thrown into my spam folder, but I've been going through there the past 3 weeks and forward and putting them back in the inbox. So we got to, because some of you send me come straight to my email, some don't. But anyway. Folks, if you want to give me an email, at least give it a try. Garden@mtbonline.org. Let's take a real quick break and come back with more of the Gestalt Gardener here on MPB right after this. Okay, welcome back. Horticulture Sale to Rushing. And before we get to some calls, we've got some lines open. It's toll-free 1-877-MPB-RING. Before we do that, I've been asking folks to send in some clean lyrics to this Dear Felder, along the line of John Prine's Dear Abby. And they're all sung and performed by Gus Mohammed from Belzona. And here's this week's version of Dear Felder by lyrics sent in from y'all.
Dear Felder, I just want to know how you came up with the name for your show. It's all about plants and flowers and trees. But the first time you said it, I thought you had sneezed. Sign, Gesundheit. Gesundheit, Gesundheit. I'll try to explain the way that I picked this particular name. Gestalt is a word that's German to start. Means that the whole exceeds the sum of its parts. Sign, Dear Felder, the question I pose has to do with the scent of a rose. I grow in manure and are fit as a fiddle, but they don't smell like poopy. Can you answer this riddle? Sign, real fragrant. Dear fragrant, this answer you seek are little monoterpenes that all roses leak. They're alcohol-based and they're found in this flower. And if we all had them, we'd never have to shower. Sign, Dear Felder.
All righty, folks. Hope you enjoy that. Hey, if you've got some ideas and some lyrics along those lines, shoot them to us in an email, garden@mpbonline.org. Me and Gus are having a whole lot of fun with this. Hope y'all are, too. By the way, the Mississippi Press Association sends my weekly column to dozens of local weekly and daily newspapers across the state. This week is about how I take and process digital photographs of my garden and share them with others. A few tips on it. Most of you know how to do this, and no problem at all, but if you're interested in a little garden photography, how to share with others, digital camera has done probably as much as anything else in the past half a century to connect people with their gardens and each other. So anyway, a few tips on that. If your local paper doesn't carry the column, ask the editor. It's free through the Mississippi Press Association. Know that newsprint and space are kind of tight, but, you know, we're having a lot of fun. Not your usual ho-hum how-to advice, and I've been having a lot of fun. Anyway, a quick warning to whoever cut and stole the sunflowers in Jesse Yancey's Urban Corner Garden in Jackson. Jesse Yancey is an old friend of mine. He's got a little urban gorilla garden where he plants flowers and vegetables and all herbs and stuff on a street corner in a neighborhood of Jackson called Bellhaven. This week, somebody came by and cut his sunflower heads, probably to use as a flower arrangement. Shame on you, but even worse than that, Santa Claus knows where you live. Anyway, bad. Horticulture tidbit of the week, I've been harvesting English peas over here in England, and black-eyed peas would be in Mississippi. Black-eyed peas and English peas are not, they're related, but they're nowhere near the same thing. Cowpea, black-eyed peas are a whole different creature entirely. They love hot, dry weather. And we have some other plants that really thrive in the heat of the deep south, things that a lot of people appreciate, but can't really grow as well as we do in the south. I'm thinking stuff like okra and watermelon, sweet potatoes, and figs and things like that. So anyway, black-eyed peas, cowpeas are traditional in the South. They're native to Africa. They grow well in really hot, dry weather, which we have a lot of. That's one of the reasons why they become a staple of our diets. If you haven't planted those, you may not know the difference between a black-eyed pea and a crowder pea. And I give you a couple of hints. Crowder peas packed in the shell really tight, so they have sort of like a flat end on each end, so you can get more in the pond. Black-eyed peas are more constricted and more round. Also, crowder peas, for anybody who is raised right, have got a lot better dark gravy. If you like to put your peas on your cornbread and you like that good dark gravy, crowder peas are the way to go. I'm not even going to get into red zipper peas and extreme peas and lady peas and all like that, but it's a fascinating group of vegetables that grow best for us better than for anybody else. We haven't been growing any this summer. Not too late to plant some, but think about putting a few out there for their historic as well as the nutrition use. If you've got some things you'd like to talk about, want to give me a call. It's toll-free, 1-877-MPB-RING. Love to chat with you. You can send me an email also, garden@mpbonline.org. I got music we'll play in just a few minutes, but let me share a couple of emails that are pretty timely. One is from a fellow named Robert LeMay. Robert said, my hummingbird feeders have grown a film that's floated to the top and formed sort of a translucent ball in the free space above the sugar water. Is my sugar water bad? And the answer is, yeah. Sugar water goes off, it ferments and gets bacteria in it really, really quick in our hot weather. If you're putting out sugar water for hummingbirds, it's really good to change it at least once a week. Once a week. Otherwise, it goes bad, and there's actually a bacteria that can build up that could possibly cause problems with the hummingbirds. But get this, when you clean your feeder out, hummingbird feeders, here's a trick that I didn't know until for a long time. Don't wash them out with soapy water, with dish detergent. Don't wash them like that because it leaves a film that causes your sugar water to slide out too fast. So instead, in between feedings, go ahead and just drop them in a pot of water and boil them for a few minutes. Boil your feeder. That sterilizes and that causes it to be too slippery later. And when you're making your sugar water solution, go ahead and use some boiled water for that too to make sure it starts out with the best shot it gets. If you have a little bit left over, slide in the refrigerator. Keep it there until it's time to fill your feeder. Also, one other, Diane Lockman says she's in Noonan, Georgia, and has problems with her female laboratory causing yellow spot, pea spots on her lawn. What can she do? And the truth is, not much. You can water the spots as soon as you can. That dilutes the urea that causes it's causing it to grow too fast. It burns it up with fertilizer. Also, I suggest that she check with her vet and see if maybe she's feeding her dog a little bit too high a protein diet. That can help also. Now, meanwhile, let's go up to Greenwood and see what Bill's doing. Bill, has it rained in the Delta at all lately?
We had some rain a little bit, about like 4 or 5 days ago, but we sure need some, and I don't think we're going to get none for a while.
Oh, well, man, nothing but hunker down, right? I'm from the Delta.
How's the weather there in England? Is it cool or hot or what?
Well, they're having heat waves. They're warning people. Top of the news is all the heat warnings and stuff. And we're talking about 88, 90 degrees, and it cools down at night. You know, but the problem is they don't have air conditioning. They don't have to act like it's hot. But anyway, what's going on with you? What's up?
Well, I was watching this program about Austria, and I saw this pretty little flower growing up in the mountains called Edelweiss. I think it grows in Germany and Switzerland, too. I was wondering, could I grow it here? Probably not, but I'd like to try. But where do you get seeds at?
That's a good question. That's the kind of thing where I used to know about it, but I can't remember. I do know that it's in the daisy and sunflower family. I can tell you that. It looks like a little... Like a weird little daily thing, daisy looking thing. It's kind of challenging though. It really needs not just the elevation. It's a funny looking flower. It needs not just the high elevation, but also needs to cool off a lot, which we just don't have. But I give you an idea. It grows in Canada. We have a few plants. There's a few plants that grow in Canada that grow in Mississippi, but that's not one of the best ones. The biggest problem is it really doesn't like a lot of water. So if you want to give it a try, put it in a place where not hot sun all day and try not to overwater it, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I'd like to. You know, it's from the song is in that Sound of Music's movie. Edelweiss.
Right. And it's
It's an old folk song of Austria, I think.
Right. Well, it's a native plant to the Alps. It's an alpine plant. But like I say, it's in the daisy family, little fuzzy white flower, kind of a compact, low-growing thing that grows better in a real gritty type of soils you find, you know, like on the side of the mountain where it's just mostly rock rubble and stuff.
Yeah. Well, cheerio, old chap. We'll talk to you later, Felder.
Appreciate it. I'll be back soon enough. Thanks, Bill. Appreciate it. Yes, indeed. Edelweiss. Another email I got this past week, and this is really timely. This is from a fellow who took my advice on spraying for chinch bugs. He wrote, he said, "You advise me on how to treat our lawn for chinch bugs." And by the way, folks, chinch bugs are more of a problem with St. Augustine and centipede, and they cause big, irregular yellow and brown ears. They can kill the grass. They kill the grass in my friend Robert Shiver's garden, front yard. Just hotter, drier. And if you see brown dying ears, they're kind of ragged. There's not a curve or anything. This time of year, it's going to be chinch bug. They're little tiny members of the stink bug family, about the size of an ant. And they actually poison the grass as they feed on it. So you can kill all the chinch bugs you want. It's going to come, but the grass is going to continue to die for a week or two after that just from being poisoned. Anyway, he said, we had a professional spraying done. They sprayed one of the products I recommended. But the problem is, it's in a wonderful neighbor's yard also. So they got a neighbor, a really good neighbor's got chinch bugs. He said, they're not aware of the problem. So what should we do? How can I address it? Will spraying our lawn protect from further infestation? The truth is, spraying doesn't prevent chinch bugs. The insecticides we have these days are designed to break down pretty quickly in the environment, which is a good thing. So you have to wait until you have an infestation, whether it's chinch bugs or mosquitoes or anything, whatever. You have to treat the ones that are there rather than prevent them. It takes at least a couple of sprays a few days or a week or so apart, and that's about all you can do. As far as the neighbor, I suggested talking to them about it, hoping that they see the light, because you can't just go out and start spraying somebody else's yard with pesticides. It might be an organic gardener or something. So anyway, chinch bugs are showing up. They're really bad. You have to jump on them. Two sprays, a few days, up to a week apart, plenty of water to soak the area, and the insecticide ought to be gone probably by the next day. We're going to do a little cheesy tune in just a second. Would like to give me a call if you want to. It's toll-free, 1-877-MPB-RING. This particular song was recommended by a caller, and I have some notes about it. Can't find my notes about it, Ron. Let's just put it this way. It was introduced in 1962. It's 7 minutes long. And within 2 weeks, I mean, within just a few months, it started being one of the top songs of the year. And it's called, I played it when I was in the Navy band during Vietnam. Anyway, Herbie Hancock wrote it. But this version is by Mongo Santa Maria from 1962. It's called Watermelon Man. I appreciate William of Pontotoc sent him a suggestion. We'll be back after this.
Can't get to a radio? Well, don't worry. MPB Think and Music Radio are available online and on our MPB public media app. It's simple. Just log on to our website at mpbonline.org to get started. This is MPB Think Radio.
Okie dokie, folks. Welcome back. Horticulture Spell of Rushing. Hope you enjoyed that little tune. William of Potter Talk said it would be a great one for this hot time of year, and I agree. Herbie Hancock had composed that, A Watermelon Man, back in the 1962, from a fellow who used to come down the street in Chicago selling fruits. Anyway, and his friend, Mongo Santa Maria, got permission to redo it as a shorter version. I hope you like that. I played that when I was in the Navy band a long, long time ago. One of the emails I got, if you want to give us a call, by the way, is toll-free 1-877-MPB-RING. Got an email from Seth Sally. He said he has a limestone gravel garden on the side of his house, but now he's concerned about what kind of plants will grow in it, because limestone, as you know, is alkaline. And what I wrote back was, it's not really that big a deal. As long as you plant the things pretty good, you know, work up the dirt really well, add a little bark or some compost or something to your soil, and help the plants get established, the mulch on top is not going to affect the pH that much. It's really, really, really not. I wouldn't worry too much about that at all. There are some plants that do well in an alkaline soil, though. They're real common. Hollies do. Nandina does. Some of you know the plant called Rose of Sharon or Althea. It's a great plant for alkaline soils. Also, Cliera, junipers. You see cedar trees growing in outcroppings of just pure limestone in parts of the state. Anyway, a lot of potted plants do that too. Anyway, it's normally not a problem using a crushed limestone as a mulch for your plants. It's just not. So I wouldn't worry about that at all. You want to give us a call, toll-free, 1-877-MPB-RING. Let's slide down to Long Beach. Hey, Terry, thank you for calling.
Hey, Felder, thank you.
Hello.
I have a problem with poison ivy. I'm highly allergic to it, and it's been coming from a neighbor's yard where, you know, they don't. It's a rental. They don't. It grows up the trees, over the fence, and now I'm even finding that it's like made its way to my front yard. These are 130 foot, and I'm very allergic to it. What do I do?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, I'm extremely allergic to it. My son, who was a Marine for a long time, and is an Army officer, he just sent a picture of his arms and neck is just completely covered with the thing. So we've always been allergic to it. As far as what you can do about it, really, as far as I'm concerned, there's only one good solution. And a lot of people don't like to hear this. I'm sorry as I can be, but I'm being really honest about this. If you can find where it's coming from, you can cut straight down between you and it. And stuff on your side, you can kill. Stuff that's on their side, you know, there's not much you can do about that unless you let them in your yard. I actually went to my neighbor's yard and got permission to kill the poison that was growing to my fence, and that worked. The only thing I know that's really effective and I'm convinced is okay for the environment and your health is to wet the foliage with Roundup or something similar. There's no other herbicide that's going to be as effective or as safe for the environment. All the other alternatives are much, much worse. They've been banned in a lot of places. So other than wetting the foliage, that's right,
or any of the products
that have that. What's that?
Roundup or what?
Roundup is a brand name. The active ingredient in it is called glyphosate. It's found in other brands. I'm not recommending just one brand is all I'm saying. But anything that's light Roundup, it only kills what you put it on the leaves of and only if they're actively growing. So if you can get your little brush or a squirt bottle and don't get it on the leaves of other things, it won't hurt tree trunks or soil or anything, and it'll decompose into carbohydrates. I'm real sure that it's safe for you to spot treat a little poison ivy with Roundup. I'm personally familiar with it. It works extremely well once and for all on poison ivy. I've done it many times in a lot of different places. Only thing I can recommend that I feel good about.
Okay. Well, I'll have to use more Roundup because this grows even under, you know, thick roots. So it kills the little leaves, but the roots just, they sprout up a foot away.
The way, the, the way Roundup works, it's absorbed in the active foliage, only of the green stuff, and it moves within the plant down and it kills the roots. See, so it's really important that the plant be actively growing. I wouldn't do it until after we've had a good rain or something like that. Or if you can just live with it over the summertime, when it comes up in the spring, it's real easy to kill, and it kills it roots and all. Again, I've done this many, many times.
Okay, thank you so much.
Good luck. I empathize with it. Whew, poison ivy. By the way, folks, if you've got big poison ivy vines, big honeysuckle vines, vines are growing way up in your trees, if you'll take a hatchet and just cut into the vine close to the ground, above there will die, and you can get somebody else to pull it down later, but it'll make it branch out close to the ground so you don't have to use as much herbicide, doesn't have as far to go to kill the roots. It's a whole lot more effective to cut the stuff down and to spray the new growth. And I always get emails from people saying I'm a bad person for recommending Roundup. I'm sorry as I can be, because I can't find anything that keeps me from sticking to that recommendation. And, yeah, I'm familiar with research. I'm not talking about agribusiness. I'm talking about squirting it on the leaves of poison ivy, honeysuckle, other hard-to-kill vines, wisteria, without hurting your tree trunks and soil nearby. Anyway, you want to give me a call, or if you want to send me an email, I'm not going to be a jerk about it. I'd be glad to explain my position. So give us a call, though. It's toll-free 1-877-MPB-RING. We've got the lines wide open right now if you want to give us a call and chat about it. One of the things that I got an interesting email about, somebody wanted to dose some fragrant plants to put around a screen porch. And I'm thinking, you know, for parts, so I'm thinking gardenias would be good, gardenia shrubs. I don't think anything is better than planting 4 o'clocks. 4 o'clocks will grow in the sun, they'll grow in the shade, and they open up late in the afternoon, and they are one of the most fragrant things. But get this, they're also terrific pollinator plants for hummingbirds during the day, and there's a great big night flying sphinx moth, a hawk moth, that comes out late at night that feeds on the flowers also. So old-fashioned 4 o'clock is what Thomas Jefferson called the marvel of Peru. That's a great one for good southern garden. It's a perennial plant. It gets about waist size, sometimes a little bit bigger, but 4 o'clock would be good. One of the emails I got this past week was somebody whose gardenias were showing bright yellow leaves. Wanted to know what the problem was. And truth is, when plants are under stress, the older leaves, the ones from last year or the earliest from this year, they tend to be the first ones to shed. And in the case of gardenias, their leaves turn bright yellow first. Magnolias will do this, too, if you've noticed. But it's the older leaves that do that. As long as the new growth looks fine, nice and green, we're not anything to worry about. You might want to prune the plant to freshen it up, give it a good soaking. But that's pretty normal with gardenias to have bright yellow older leaves. Again, the numbers are wide, the phone's wide open. You want to give us a call, toll-free 1-877-MPB-RING. I was at a restaurant the other day, and where they used to have by the cash register little piles of matches, a little fold-over cardboard thing, matches. Anyway, this place, it has what looked like match boxes. You pick them up, instead of matches in there, it's got little cardboard sticks, and each one has a couple of three little seeds stuck on it. You just pull these off and stick it in some dirt and water it, and you can grow peppers and tomatoes and things like that. Instead of matchbooks of matches, these are matchbooks of flowers. We're going to take a quick break. If you want to give us a call, it's toll-free, 1-877-MPB-RING. Got a few events coming up this fall that are related to gardening. Be glad to help promote them if I can. Shoot me an email at garden@mpbonline.org. Also, I have a question I'd like to ask. If anybody who's listening has a copy of the book that Steve Bender and I wrote called Pass Along Plants. If anybody listening has a copy of Pass Along Plants, I'm looking for a Latin name that I can't remember of a plant that's called Golden Glow. Golden Glow. I want to know what Steve Bender for Southern Living said the Latin name was. So anyway, if anybody's at home and got a copy of Pass Along Plants, look up Golden Glow. Tell me what the Latin name is. I just can't remember. We'll be back with more of the Gestalt Gardener here on Mississippi Public Broadcasting. 77 MPB Ring right after this. righty, folks, welcome back again. Horticulture Cellar Rushing. We're talking about gardening here on Mississippi Public Broadcasting. You tune in anytime during the week, Monday through Friday, all morning, every morning, and hear all sorts of local folks talking about local issues. And a lot of them are quite fun. All of them are very interesting. Anyway, you want to give me a call? It's toll-free 1-877-MPB-RING, and we're going to go to Florence now and talk with Roger. Hey, Roger, good morning.
Well, good morning to you, way over yonder. Got two things.
Yes, sir. My heart's right in my little garden in Mississippi. I wish somebody was watering the truck garden I've got, but we'll see what makes it. You know, I do the acid test. If it can make it through the wintertime with no covering, summertime with no watering, that's a tough plan. We'll find out when I get on. What right. You got going on today?
I'll swing by there and water it, and we'll get Robert Shivers to do it.
There you go. Yeah, that'll be the day. What can I help you with, man?
My two items. One is a suggestion for one of your cheesy songs, and you may remember it. Does spearmint lose its flavor on the bedpost overnight?
I got you. I got it. I just wrote it down. I know it well.
Yeah. And then
I know it well.
The other hint is for poison ivy. I live down here at a place we named Green Hope, and we've got the poison ivy. I think it's the capital of poison ivy, capital of Rankin County. But anyway, that poison ivy that you spread, that spreads out on people's lawns and other places, is probably coming from the berries way up in a tree nearby. In that case of your caller, the tree in the next yard. I go out and I find those big old vines going up the trees, and I cut them down near the ground somewhere, nice clean cut, and put Roundup right on the the top of the thing, and it soaks in. You can tell it's going down where it does its job. So if you can find the roots or sneak over to the neighbor's yard in the nighttime and make a cut down near where they start growing, the vines, the big vines.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Now, Roundup, the problem is it's absorbed by green tissue, so you got to squirt it as soon as you make the cut. If you wait a little while, then that heals over and doesn't work quite as well. So you got to chop and squirt.
That's
well, you're
cool.
Right. Poison ivy has white berries and burrs. But I have little seedlings coming up every now and then. My little flower beds where burrs drop the seeds.
Yeah, that's true. Well, thanks for what you're doing.
All right, I appreciate it. Thank you, sir. And I look up that tune. It's been a while since I heard that tune when I was a kid. Appreciate it, man. Okay, and by the way, folks, I was asking if anybody has a copy of the book called Pass Along Plants handy. There's a plant in it. Troy Holmes from Purvis has found it growing in his parents' yard down near Summit, and he wanted to know what to identify. It's an old outhouse plant. A lot of people call it Golden Glow or Cut and Come Again. And Steve Benner from Southern Living and I had an argument about the Latin name, and I can't remember which one we agreed it was going to be on. So if anybody can tell me about that, I'd appreciate it. Meanwhile, let's slide down to Mobile. Hey, George, thank you for calling. What's up, man?
Hey, fella. This is George Canada. I hope you can understand my deep southern accent. Actually, I'm from Germany. Fella, I like your show very much, and I have a question. Weeds are growing everywhere in my yard, and they grow faster than everything else. So I collect leaves from the oak trees in my yard and put them on flower beds and then put pine straw on it in order to let the leaves not grow. And I have a discussion with my wife. She says that's not a good method. What is your opinion about that?
Okay, now run it by. You take the leaves, you chop them up, and then what do you do with them?
Well, I put them just in the flower beds, cover
right.
the soil with leaves, just
right.
Inch or two inch thick, and then put in order to have it look nice, I put pine straw on it.
Yeah, a couple of things. First of all, each of those things will decompose. They're broken down by and dirt, but the bigger the pieces, the woodier pieces, the longer they take. It'd be better if you could run a lawnmower through it to break them up into small pieces first. And as far as layering them, if you put the leaves down first, earthworms will come up and eat them more quickly, but the pine straw and the sticks and things like that, they're just going to lay on the top as a mulch for a long time. It doesn't hurt anything, but if you break them up into pieces, they would go back into the dirt a whole lot quicker and improve your soil. That's the only thing I would do is just chop things as best you can. But it doesn't hurt anything. It's just no different from putting bark mulch on top of the ground.
So it doesn't hurt. Did I get you? I can hardly hear you, but the method is okay. Is that what I hear?
It's fine. It's fine. Sure is.
It's fine. So there's no, the soil is not getting sour or the pH is not impacted by the leaves.
Very.
They decompose.
It's practically, it almost can't be measured. It has a very, very minor effect on the soil. It's not worth worrying about.
Okay. Okay, I appreciate it. You made my day, okay. And as I said, I it's fun listening to you. Okay.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it a whole bunch.
Okay, thank you very much.
A lot of people have. Thank you.
Have a
appreciate
day.
It. Thanks. A whole lot of people think putting stuff on top of the dirt is going to have a real big effect in it.
And it seems we have lost Felder. If you want to squeeze in one last call for the program, 1-877-672-7464. That's 1-877-MPB-RING. Or you can send us an email, garden@mpbonline.org.
This Saturday at 7 p.m. on the Thacker Mountain Radio Hour, it's our show from the Neshoba County Fair, featuring Today Show chef and cookbook author Elizabeth Highschool and North Mississippi blues man Lightning Malcolm, plus country rockers Young Valley. That's this Saturday at 7 p.m., the Thacker Mountain Radio Hour on Mississippi Public Broadcasting Think Radio. Here comes Jim
D. Felder, you got me on my toes this morning, man.
You sent me a text and I pushed the off button. Sorry. I only have one button to push and I shouldn't push it at all. Anyway, sorry about that. Let's go to Claudine and Clint. Hey,
well, actually, hey, Claudine, good. Actually, in the ruckus, we lost Clydene. but her question was about plants for the fall garden. She's in Clinton, so I guess she was maybe talking about preparing at this time of the year for her fall garden.
Okay, I can handle that. Sorry about that, folks. I only have one button, and I still push it wrong. If you want to plant stuff like tomatoes and peppers and summertime stuff, you can do it if you do it this week or next. We have plenty of time for a fall summer garden, and this, a lot of things will actually produce better in the fall. If you want to plant things that like cool weather, like broccoli and cabbage and lettuce, it's a little bit early because it's still kind of hot. But if you can work your dirt up and put some seeds of small plants and keep them moist, not wet, just get them through this next month, they'll do great. A little early for planting collards and cabbage and cauliflower. You can't get them at garden centers anyway. But so we're at the early beginning of planting cool season stuff like lettuce and collards and things like that. We're at the end of the time, but still plenty of time to plant tomatoes, peppers, beans, things like that. We have time before we get across, which is going to be 3 or 4 months from now. So anyway, hope that helps. Main thing right now is you need to keep the ground moist, not wet, which means when you plant stuff, cover it up with leaves. Make sure the ground is shaded from direct sun, and also keep plants moist, not wet. Also have a little bit more trouble with insects as the season goes on. We have plenty of time to talk about all that. We got more things to share every week right here on MPB. Just Talk Gardener is a production of Mississippi Public Broadcasting, and my producer is laid back but extra hard working Java Chapman. If you, I'm your host, Bill Rushing. I'm going to be thinking of all of y'all as I start getting ready. I got me some new tool handles to bring back, and I'm getting ready to get back and start taking care of my summer and fall garden. If you have a chance, take a kid to a farmer's market, take a kid to a gardener center, give them an opportunity, show them how to do something simple, and learn how to do what we do best, and that's Get Dirty. See y'all next week.